Hi, everyone. Welcome to the HIP Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Duby, Principal Technologist Americas at Sempris. Today's episode is a little different from our usual format. What you're about to hear is a recent Sempris roundtable discussion hosted by Michelle Crockett, our Associate Vice President of Product Marketing. Michelle brought together five experts who collectively represent a remarkable depth of experience in identity security. The panel includes Alex Weinert, Chief Product Officer at Sempris, Christopher Brum, Cybersecurity Architect at Glucania, Eric Woodruff, Chief Identity Architect at Sempris, George De Almeida Pinto, Senior Incident Response Lead at Sempris, and Michael Van Hornbeek, CEO and Senior Solution Architect at The Collective Consulting. They cover a lot of ground: AI and identity resilience, how to allocate limited budget across prevention and recovery, the attack patterns that keep showing up year after year, and more. With that, I'll hand it over to Michelle. Enjoy the discussion.
First, I want to touch on a couple of things that came up in the poll. The first question, it's about AI and identity resilience. AI technology has benefits and probably some challenges as well. So if you want to give us a quick overview of your perspective on that. Eric, would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the top of my head, right, it's from a defender perspective, probably the biggest concern is the grounding of AI so that it's not hallucinating, that what you're getting back from an AI system is reliable, right? Because if, you're implementing AI in like a SOC and it's making stuff up, right, that's definitely not a good thing, to sort of put it bluntly. But, you know, I still think there's a lot of benefits, right? Whether it's helping people visualize data or sort of sift through data, right? I'm no, you know, KQL expert with things like Sentinel or whatnot, right? But I think if you can empower people to ask in a natural way, right, natural language, you know, can you give me data about, you know, X, Y, and Z, right? That I think there's a lot of potential there to, benefit from these systems, so... I guess that's my high-level take on it.
Yeah, that's great. Anybody else want to chime in on that?
Yeah, I think it's as Michael said about Active Directory, it's not good or bad per se. It brings just challenges and opportunities. So, and I think what we learned in the last years that the attackers are taking every opportunity to improve their stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think we also have to use this to getting faster and getting better. And but as many things, we have to keep in mind, okay, just don't just use it. So take care. So it's relatively easy to leak big amount of your data to your internal log data or so to any AI.
Great, thank you. The other concern that came up in the polls is budget. So identity security teams, just organizations in general, CISO, CIO, there's limited budget. So when you look at the whole landscape of identity security, where is the best place to allocate that money? And I know there's tension between trying to catch attacks or reduce the attack surface at the beginning, to rolling back changes, remediating attacks, and then focusing on being able to recover, recognizing that we probably can't stop every attack. So Michael, would you like to comment on that first about what your guidance would be to an organization as everyone has limited budget?
I mean, that's a really tough one. And you can't make an omelet without breaking an egg. If you don't have any budget at all, then you're just going to have to do with what you have. If you don't have any eggs, then you'll not eat an omelet. In other words, everyone's resource constrained. And I think the very best, if you don't have technology to help you, like I kind of mentioned in my presentation, like, there's great tools out there that can speed up recovery and everything else. And if you just don't have the budget for it, then you'll have to, put something together yourself. However, what we see is that most organizations just don't. and they don't prepare, they don't put in time and effort, which ultimately is also a resource and also is cost. And then they just get cheated by being cheap anyway, because you're going to pay double, triple, quadruple if you know, that brown smelly stuff hits the fan at some point. Then you're going to have to spend 20 times more time trying to recover, and you know, you've lost all the budget that you've saved by not spending it beforehand. You've just, you know, given it away at that point. Now the reality is that, you know, money that I didn't spend is money that I still have, that's still in the balance sheets, and you know, that's still great. Money that I need to spend is part of an incident that is, you know, or if an incident happens, and there are still too many CIOs or even, you know, upper management that rely on the fact that it's not going to happen. I'm just a little bit more cautious. It's like car insurance. No one wants to pay it, but everyone does anyway, because just in case something happens. This is the same thing. And some people have an expensive car insurance policy, and some people don't. But there's a difference, and you always pay at the end.
Yeah, I think it's a risk assessment, just kind of balance, you know, for most organizations, like what are the chances that this would happen? So, George, I think for you, since you've seen so many disasters in progress, what would you say are things that organizations can do? I know a lot of times incident response teams find that the basics aren't covered and attackers are still getting in through some pretty pretty well-known vulnerabilities. So do you have any comments on that, or what you've seen in the field that organizations can focus on?
It also ties a little bit into to what Michael was saying. It's regarding the budget. It's a different question, but I think it still relates to the same area. Is not doing anything, in my opinion, even if you don't have a budget to buy a tool, let's just say to buy third party tooling or whatever. Not doing anything, it's just not an option today. It's not matter. It's not about if, but rather when you're probably going to be attacked, especially if your security isn't as it should be. And so if you have to make a choice, because let's keep it simple, you have the things before the attack, think about being as secure as possible, and also the things after the attack. When you have been attacked, what do you do? In other words, you have to be prepared. I would at least start using the free tooling, as Michael was already mentioning, like Forest Druid, like Purple Knight. Start assessing your security of your AD and just start working on it, even if you have to do it yourself, and keep going. It won't be difficult. It won't be an easy task, because from experience, I know you can be overloaded with a huge amount of data and information that needs to be fixed. Just start. Do with the quick and easy stuff, the critical stuff, and then continue. Along the way, it will get easier. So one of the things, also to answer the question, Michelle, is one of the things that often appear during, let's say, security assessments after a company has been attacked. One of the examples is certificate templates within AD. For whatever reason, those are, I can say that it's always an issue. There's always some misconfiguration or mispermissioning or miss whatever. It's always in the list of things to do. So it looks like apparently organizations don't understand the Microsoft PKI to configure it in the correct way, because it's always in the list of things to do. There are so many things that can be bad within AD. And I think it was Michael at the beginning during his presentation where he said, there's a whole history of things, especially if an Active Directory was installed many, many years ago. Along the way, all kinds of things happen. And from a, let's say, a people perspective, and we are all bad at it, you do something which was back then a good idea, and then you don't clean it up.
Yeah.
So what was a good idea back then, but maybe not today, you need to clean up your stuff. We all are very bad at cleaning up our stuff. Personally, it doesn't matter. You need to clean it up, because it's not a good idea anymore to leave stuff around. You need to fix your stuff. Otherwise, it's somebody else using it against you.
Yeah. Alex, if you could give us your take on this. The question was, the attendees expressed in the poll questions concern about how to divide their budget with identity security, where to focus, prevention, remediation, recovery, where would they get the most bang for their buck, or what approach should an organization take?
Well, not to be too glib, but it is really important that we recognize that almost all organizations are underfunded in this area. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be making your choices. I think that one of the nice things about like Purple Knight is it'll help you prioritize. Mm-hmm. In terms of actually, you know, what are the tasks that you need to do at that level? I think that in some sense, one strategy might be to, you know, think about like putting a significant amount of your energy into getting your peers and your executives and your board engaged, right? So that you can actually free up more resources. In my talk, I talked about kind of the fractal nature of it, the amount of work to be done. Like we talk about doing the prioritized Purple Knight task, we're doing like a small percentage of the prevention stuff. But if you're doing prevention properly, you're also rehearsing things like your automatic communications, your playbooks, like running your tabletops. So there's a lot of, there's probably a lot more work than you have budget, right? Mm-hmm. With that, you know, Purple Knight Forest Druid will help you identify the highest risk paths into your tier zero. And you can work through that prioritization list. You know, I think I have long been a proponent of prevention. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, to the extent that you can get, like, for example, we know that, you know, something like 70% of applications are just unused. 95% of applications are over permission, right? All applications have credentials written down somewhere because they don't have memory, right? And so like that kind of cleanup, you know, converting users to phishing resistant authentication, in my opinion, you could divert all of the budget you spend on training humans to be less vulnerable, just mm-hmm. get back and use it for other things. You know, so it depends on the way you were having the conversation. I think one thing that I used to say in my last job, or my cadre of friends used to say in the last job, and basically between us, we did most of the incident response at Microsoft, mm-hmm. was never waste a crisis. So one thing that I would say has been super effective for me is like really building your resourcing ask in the incident. Like, right, like there's emotional window when the people that are funding you are going to be willing to fund. And it is while they are in the, oh my God, why didn't I fund this moment, which is like during the attack, right? And then within 3 or 4 days, they're like, oh, it's fine. You know, like as soon as you clean up the mess, they're like, oh, what mess? You know,
short,
like,
memory. Yeah.
Memory. So it's pretty important, I think, that like when you have incidents, that every incident you have, you find ways to essentially make sure that that's like generating, you know, attention from your executives so you can get the funding you need to do a broader sweep. But if you're like everybody else and you're super underfunded, then I would say, you know, prevention goes a long way, but focus on deterministic prevention, like things that are definitely going to work, as opposed to like, we're going to train you to be resistant to phishing attacks, which is going to maybe they need all 2%, convert people to passkey, it gets it to 100%, they can't be phished. The application that you're not sure if you need it, scream testing it, turning it off is great. You know, anything you can do to like be just like get stuff off your worry radar forever. Like stuff that you like think you, well, I made that problem a little bit less bad, I sort of still need to worry about it. It's not a great way to go. It's best to take things all the way off the table.
Yeah, that's great. Eric, from your perspective as a researcher, what tactics do you see attackers gravitating toward now? Or how has the landscape kind of changed as organizations, you know, are they doing a better job at sort of that endpoint protection? And so now attackers are moving in different areas, or what trends do you see? And maybe touch a little bit on accounts like service accounts that aren't, you know, tied to a specific person and how they're abusing those.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say maybe unfortunately, it's like what's old is new again, right? For the most part, the attacks are the same. I mean, we see different is in people, I guess, you know, attackers moving into Entra, but in ways it's similar, right? Abusing service accounts that are overprivileged in Active Directory translates to abusing service principles that are overprivileged in Entra. And defenders have a hard time, you know, wrapping their arms around all this stuff. So, you know, I think from an attacker perspective, right, until things change, you know, like Alex is talking about with, you know, going towards pass keys, right? Because we've seen improvements, marginal improvements in MFA, right? So the way people are phished is sort of changing. But I think in many ways, right, those attacks are still leveraging the same old thing, right? And I think if we look at, you know, a lot of data from preventive, you know, security assessments, right, the same stuff that comes up, you know, tomorrow or yesterday is the same stuff that would come up 5, 6, 10 years ago as far as problems. So yeah, I don't think until, right, we change things, the attacks are going to necessarily evolve, right? Because there's no need to.
Yeah, and I think one specific challenge is organizations are becoming more cross-platform, you know, more hybrid identities, multi-cloud identities. Alex mentioned the SolarWinds attack earlier, and I think that was one of the first ones where it was kind of well known that an attack would move from the cloud to on-premises or vice versa. So I think that gave people a lot different perspective. And I assume you see the challenges increasing with those multi-cloud environments.
Yeah, I mean, right, to me, it's just you have this exponential sprawl in the new systems, but your defenders, again, right, to the point of not having, you know, time, money, resources, et cetera, to protect it, right? You're just increasing your surface area for attack, but not necessarily matching that with your defenses, right? Multi-cloud is, you know, great from HA and BC and all those different things, but, you know, you start to tie AWS, GCP, Azure, you know, and on-prem all together, right? I mean, now you have all these different points of, you know, potential abuse from an attacker perspective. And yeah. I think defenders just really, really have a hard time keeping up with it all.
Yeah. Anything you can add on that, Alex?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, this is, you know, with systems, like, complexity is the enemy of security, right? And complexity tends to be the enemy of reliability. It reminds me of the pilots have an expression that it's like, if you have a twin engine plane, it just, you get to go fly farther to the crash site. Like the complexity, unless you, you know, have really reasoned it out, is going to overwhelm any benefits you're going to get from security or availability, almost certainly. And there's, you know, non-trivial cost. Like, you have to be in a position where you can actually, you know, flip back and forth, which means you're paying fees at both places. And, you know, so yes, generally speaking, it's pretty tough to do right.
Yeah, great. Just a couple more kind of nitty-gritty questions for you, Chris, on your presentation. How much effort is a proof of concept for inter-private access?
So I just want to come back to that last question. I see a slight difference. So, but we see attackers are using or exploiting more and more on-prem network components. So VPN gateways, as an example. So that was also the main driver for the most projects for Entra private access. So I did in the last two years, because you're just losing that attack surface. And it's done, yeah, usually in a day workshop. So mm-hmm. you need to set up two Windows boxes. You need someone with the right on-prem and in your Entra tenant, and then go for it. So the projects, the rollouts are more complex though. And because, yeah, in many companies you need multiple teams. So you need the networking guys, identity, security team, client people, and but a proof of concept is usually really, I did it several times in a day.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Good. Maybe we just do a lightning round here at the end. If there's one thing that you would recommend companies do to avoid a breach in Active Directory, if you're forced to name just one thing, what would it be? And I'll start with you, Michael.
There's many things that I would recommend, but if there was one thing, it's what Alex said earlier. Focus on doing the right things, the basics, the things that have the most impact, right? The pre-breach activities, the things that protect you, the easiest, run a tool like Purple Knight and just follow its guidance. I've said it multiple times, and I'm really not saying this because it's a Sempress event. I'm really not. It just is like the most impactful thing. You get a list. It's like your to-do list. Go do this. There is an order in which of things you do this. You just focus on that. That'll be the most impactful thing.
It's a free tool, and the remediation guidance is prioritized. So you don't even have to think about what to do. We do a report on Purple Knight. We poll users about what their scores are when they first start using it, and ask them, so then when you ran it again, how much did the score change? And a couple of people I talked to in interviews, they were amazed at how quickly they could improve their scores just by going through that top priority list. And people even with very small teams, very, very few resources, just set a task for themselves each day to tackle one thing and were amazed at what they could get done in a week. So,
yeah. And some things, to be fair, right? Some things take time to fix. Like, can't just good turtle certain elements, even though the tool be like, do something about this. But at least, it's a top priority. The CIO, the CISO, whomever is responsible for the budget knows where to prioritize stuff and where to put their resources. That's one. But what I like even more in a certain way, it's not just the actionable list, but it's also the scoring that you mentioned. Aside from the fact that, however scoring is done, it is a tool that the IT manager or CISO or whatever can use to actually show, hey, we're making progress. We're actually moving forward, because that's the number one question. Like, hey, we're spending so much money on security or whatever IT operations. You've shown you're actually doing something valuable. Well, remember this report from January, we had an F-. Hey, look, we're at D. That's better. It's still not great, but this is a reason why we have to keep investing or keep doing stuff or keep pushing resources. But I would say that is one of the most impactful things that's easiest to follow.
Yeah. Leaders love metrics, and I think that kind of score also helps mitigate that feeling of, well, I'm not sure what the risk is, what's the chances are this is going to happen, and actually be able to apply some numbers to that. So Eric, what would you say? One thing.
I'd echo what Michael said with preventative. Yeah. And obviously, right, I might be biased towards Purple Knight. I've had my fingers in a bunch of the Entra part, but trying to be agnostic, right? Whatever the tools, whether it's PK, Meister, Forest Druid, other community tools. But again, if you're a Microsoft customer, the ability to use a CSA and right, there's potentially assessments there. Like, I'll say a lot of times when I talk with, customers or in the community, it's like a tool battle, but really end of the day, it's like, whatever will help you move the sort of needle forward from a preventative standpoint is also, well worth the time, but that prevention piece is key.
Yeah. George, what would you say?
Well, it's difficult to come up with something new because everybody's already said what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Well, I think to add on to the story is to not just use Purple Knight for let's call it the static configurations within Active Directory, but also pay special attention to your tier zero, protect the tier zero. And there are tools out there like Forest Druid that help you protecting it by checking what is your tier zero, it has its default, then add to it whatever is indeed your custom tier zero parts, then everything that interacts with your tier zero, that's the stuff that you need to pay attention to make sure it doesn't cross-contaminate into your tier zero. So, and also be prepared if things go wrong.
Yeah. And I think that tools like Forest Druid that show those risky access paths to those
that analysis, indeed.
Especially in those complex environments where you're not even sure, what accounts have access to.
Well, one of the things regarding the Forest Druid is literally the attack path analysis, because when you look at the attack path analysis, it's a combination of configurations that provide you that attack path. So yeah. Resolving an attack path might resolve multiple bad configurations.
Yeah, great. Chris, what would you say?
I think it's fix the basics. So, and focus on what you can do, not what you can't do.
Great.
And I think that tiering part, that is a good idea.
Yeah, I think in the world where you don't have unlimited resources, prioritizing what matters most is a good way for organizations to make the most of the resources that they do have. So, Alex, you want to wrap it up for us?
Yeah, it's a tough act to follow. A bunch of the really smart people here. I'm going to go a little different direction. I'm going to say get rid of surface area. So I'm thinking back of all the cases I've done over the years, like abandoned applications, and abandoned users, or like, and old permissions, right? Like people in situations where they don't need the permissions anymore. So I think that like one thing that I would recommend doing is just going on a major purge. I mean, most of these efforts that I've been involved in, some like 80% of permissions that are out there, or users have access to systems they don't need. So going back to that tier zero system and like just, 100% of what's got access to tier zero, you should know what it is, why it has access, why it needs it, what's going on. Like, and that is, I think, a pretty good, not an answer already given answer, which is just, disable any apps that you can't prove what they're there for, turn them off, see who yells. Any users that aren't with company anymore, for God's sake, get them out of there. A good thing to do if you're invested in indexing or search in your environment is search for CRUD patterns in your own documents and then go purge all those things, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of things you can do that are kind of like, go clean up the obvious messes, right? Like it's not like you got to get everything clean with a toothbrush. You can start by just taking out the snow shovel and getting the junk out of the room. Yeah. So get clear away as much as you can so you can see what's left.
That's great. Great. Well, thank you, everyone. Again, we really appreciate everyone joining us today with our experts from across the world. So thanks, everyone, for coming. Thanks to our speakers for joining. And everyone have a great rest of your day.
And that's a wrap on the roundtable. Thanks to Michelle for running that discussion and to Alex, Christopher, Eric, George, and Michael for their time. I hope you learned as much as I did. If you want to go deeper on anything discussed in the conversation, go to Semperus.com or drop us a line. You can also find past episodes and more information about the show at hipconf.com/podcasts. I'm Sean Doobie. Stay secure, and I'll see you in the next one.